Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, April 23rd. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. I was awestruck. Meet Champaign's top cop, war hero's son who picked his profession early on. From childhood games of cops and robbers, I always wanted to be the good guy, to that feeling he got the first time a police officer visited his class at Robeson Elementary, Tim Atterbury heard his career calling before he even made it to high school. This was something I wanted to do from the time I was a child, says Atterbury, a midnight shift officer in Champaign Police Patrol Division. I suppose I never outgrew it. When I was little, we had a Champaign police officer come to our classroom. I don't remember his name. I was a little guy in kindergarten or first grade, and I was awestruck at this guy in a uniform towering over me. He carried himself a certain way. He was very friendly and approachable to the children. That made an impact. Today, after 26 years on the job in his hometown, Atterbury will be saluted for a job well done. The 50-year-old husband to Deanna, father of three, and 1986 Centennial High grad will be honored by the Exchange Club as the 2017 Champaign Police Officer of the Year. On the eve of his big day, Atterbury answered a few questions from our Tim Mitchell. You started your law enforcement career in Farmer City. Do you remember your first arrest in your 7 months there? It was a domestic arrest. This guy was an over-the-road truck driver who had come home, and his wife was particularly unpleasant toward him. In an effort to separate himself from her, he gave her a shove. The other officer said we needed to arrest him for domestic battery. So I did and took him to the DeWitt County Jail in Clinton, for which I had to get directions. I had never been there before. When I got there, I remember a couple of the corrections officers standing there looking at me. They were standing in front of what looked to me to be empty cells, and they told me they had no room. They told me to give this guy an NTA. I said I would love to if only I knew what an NTA was. But they had to explain it was a notice to appear and the procedure to issue one. I did that and gave him a ride back to Farmer City. I talked to one of the hotel operators into giving him a room for the night. That way he could be separated from his wife until they both cooled down a little bit. You patrol the area north of University Avenue and east of Prospect Avenue. How has crime changed over the years in Champaign? It is a less busy area than it once was. I think that a lot of the structural changes made when Birch Village was removed and replaced it with townhomes, has been very successful. I think they have some work requirements for the residents. They have to show that they have employment. We don't have the associated problems, the drug dealing, the loitering, the violent problems we used to see at Birch Village. It is very, very nice, particularly for the people who have lived there for a long time. What type of crime is on the rise here in Champaign? Shootings. Every time that happens, there's a tragedy, whether somebody is hit by the gunfire or not. Somebody is firing bullets in a populated area out of anger. They have no regard for anyone around them. They have no regard for the consequences of their actions. They have no regard for human life. In my experience, what has led to the increase in this type of indiscriminate violence is a decrease in family structure. The people who are engaging in these behaviors routinely get further and further away from an intact family structure. It frustrates me to no end. We accept the responsibility of coming to try to intervene and coming afterwards to pick up the pieces, but we are people and we have families. We get tired of seeing people that will not demonstrate respect for human life. Who is your hero? I'm a big John Wayne fan, and people say he was my hero. I have to correct them. John Wayne wasn't my hero. My hero was my father, Franklin Atterbury, who was in the lead American aircraft for the Army Air Corps to reach Berlin in World War II. My father was a radio operator in a B-17. On March 4, 1944, they were sent to Berlin. They had been sent there before, but missions had been scrubbed for weather or what have you. On this particular day, it was a nasty weather day. While they were flying out of England en route to Berlin and already over Germany, they received a radio recall due to weather. My father was the radio operator, and through the intercom on the plane, he told his pilot that, judging from the tone and clarity of the signal, the recall message was coming from a nearby source. He also informed the pilot the message was one letter off on the call sign. My father let the pilot make his own decision. The pilot concluded it was an enemy intelligence and not a valid recall. That day, 850 planes turned back and returned to England, but my father's plane was one of 29 planes that continued. My father's plane now became the lead plane of those 29 planes, and they bombed Berlin, and he lived to tell the tale. A few last personal questions. What's your favorite food? You're asking a chubby guy what his favorite food is. That's kind of an unfair question. I do enjoy Chinese food. My favorite place to eat used to be the China Inn. Now all the restaurants are trying to compete to be number one. And finally, how about a favorite vacation destination? Anywhere with a campground. I enjoy camping. I've had the privilege of traveling through our country a little bit. I've been out west, and I've been out north into the south and southeast. Shortly after we were married, my wife and I stayed at the foot of Devil's Tower in Wyoming. It was really neat to get up in the morning and see that in front of me. Another article on the front page, Analyst, Racial Divide in Traffic Stops Narrows from Urbana. The police department's crime analysis said there's a meaningful difference in new traffic stop data that will be presented at tonight's Urbana City Council meeting. The statistics show how often drivers of different races are stopped by police. UPD's Melissa Hayes updates the council when new data is available. Hayes' latest report will show a reduction in the amount of times officers have stopped black drivers. She said the decline is stark and not a typical fluctuation. The new data, which covers the time period of October 2017 to March 2018, shows there were 97 fewer stops of black drivers in the past 6 months compared to the five-year average. Haynes noted that there were also fewer traffic stops overall in the past 6 months compared to the five-year average. This difference in overall stops is less, but not so less that it's noticeable. It's not outside the standard deviation. Haynes' report tonight marks the second consecutive one that showed a reduction in the number of black drivers stopped. But the decline is bigger this time than it was in her February presentation. Another significant difference is the new data that police stopped 95 fewer white drivers in the past 6 months compared to the five-year average. That and the reduction in stops of black drivers brings the overall amount of stops for each group closer to what Haynes said is expected stopping rate based on the city's total driving population. If a racial group's overall number of stops is higher or lower than an expected stopping rate, Haynes said racial disparities can be determined. The total amount of stops for white drivers in the past 6 months, 902, is below the racial disparity benchmark, while the same number for black drivers, 416, is above it. Tonight's council agenda also includes the introduction of a new city program to assist drivers with broken car lights. Mayor Diane Marlin said the program called Fix-It Tickets will provide payment vouchers to drivers stopped by the police for busted headlights, taillights, or license plates lights. The idea for this program came out of the city's Traffic Stop Task Force. An initial $2,500 is being allocated for the vouchers, and Marlin said she'll determine if more should be added once she sees how the project goes. When people are stopped, they'll get a warning ticket and a voucher. They can use the voucher at a chain auto repair place in Urbana. The vouchers aren't mandatory and can be declined. The overall goal is to reduce reasons for stopping people, and it's a safety issue too. And from the sports page, rolling right along. State runner-ups in Class 2A last 2 years, Spartans are hitting their stride from St. Joseph. Jake Schluter is one of six seniors on Coach Josh Haley's latest St. Joseph Ogden baseball team. As not only an upperclassman, but also an athlete who has been part of two runner-up showings in Class 2A, it's safe to say he can accurately gauge how the Spartans are performing. Last Wednesday, with SJO in the midst of a four-game win streak, Schluter offered a comment on that matter. In the beginning of the year, it was hard to find some leadership, Schluter said on the News Gazette's The Locker Room segment. But right now, I feel like everyone knows their roles and we're rolling, and I feel like we can beat anyone. Roughly 24 hours later, Schluter tossed a no-hitter against Illini Prairie Conference foe Pontiac. After a 3-6 start to the 2018 campaign, SJO has won 10 of its last 11 games ahead of today's tilt at Prairie Central. A slate of difficult foes to open the year left the Spartans' record looking weak in comparison to the team's expectations. But while SJO, of course, wanted to win those early games, Haley said his group schedule provided exactly what he was looking for. It was designed that way. We've been to the state championship the last 2 years. We've won 30 games three times. So we said we could be sitting at 15-16 wins right now, or we could go challenge them and play a 3A-4A schedule early on. Among the Spartans' first nine opponents was Joliet Catholic, Max Prep's third-rated team in Illinois. That matchup was joined by games against 3A clubs Washington, Morton, and Stillman Valley, as well as 2017 2A champion Tutopolis. All five of those showdowns ended in an SJO setback. That isn't bothering the 13-7 Spartans now, though. I feel like definitely at the start of the season it was kind of tough, senior Tyler Slagley said, but once the postseason rolls around, it just helps us out. Work remains, though, before the postseason. Better defense and better hitting with runners in scoring position are two areas he wants to see improvement in. Still, what really pumped up Haley was not a result on the diamond, but an early April trip to Goreville for two weekend games. You could start seeing that camaraderie and guys coming together. They're starting to support each other. They love each other and they have fun together. You see that happening off the field, and then you see the results on the field. And from Champaign, Bullpen Blues. Illini relievers can't hold on late in loss to Antelopes. Several times this season, Dan Hartleb has credited his bullpen for bailing out his Illinois baseball team. The Illini Revelers, though, were the ones in need of a bailout Sunday afternoon after giving up three runs during the eighth inning of an eventual 5-3 loss for Illinois in the final game of a three-game series against Grand Canyon at Illinois Field. After Grand Canyon took a 2-0 lead in the fourth inning, Michael Macy supplied an RBI double before Bren Spilling came round to score on a wild pitch and tie the game at 2 in the fifth. The Antelopes, 22-17, broke the tie with three runs against three pitchers in the eighth inning to pull ahead for good, despite the Illini scoring again in the ninth. In softball, Illini earned sweep. Illinois nabbed its 30th win of the season Sunday afternoon with a 9-7 victory over Iowa to complete the series sweep at Eichelberger Field. The Illini, 30-15, 9-6 Big Ten, put up eight runs in the third inning and never relinquished their lead to earn their second Big Ten sweep of the season, as well as their fifth straight win. Redshirt junior Carly Thomas went 3-for-4 at the plate with two RBI, and Maddie Doan hit a three-run home run, her eighth of the season, to lead Illinois. Arcola native Taylor Edwards threw a complete game to improve to 12-7 on the season. In women's golf, record low round, Illinois women's golf carded a final round 281, tying a post-best single round en route to a runner-up finish at the Big Ten Championships Sunday in Mainville, Ohio, the program's best finish at the tournament since 1976. Illinois and Maryland both finished at one under par, four strokes behind champion Michigan State. Grace Park, Canid and Bing Shimley all tied for eighth after each shot a 214 on the weekend. In men's tennis, senior day victors. The eighth-ranked Illini won 6-1 over Minnesota for senior day on Sunday at Atkins Tennis Center. Senior Alex Vuick won in straight sets and singles, along with Alex Kovac, Zeke Clark, and Caleb Carney. Alex Brown also won in singles. In women's tennis, Illini win 20th. The 15th-ranked Illini won 5-2 at Penn State on Sunday to become one of three teams in program history to post a 20-win season. Jacqueline Switz, Maya Rubinsky, Sasha Bea, Danielle Novak, and Emily Dong all won their singles matches. And finally, in men's golf, four top 20 finishes. The Illini took second place Sunday at the Robert Kepler Intercollegiate in Columbus, Ohio. Senior Nick Hardy tied for second after a final round 69 left him with a 3-under 210, while Brian Bumgarten, Dylan Meyer, and Giovanni Tadio all joined Hardy in the top 20. Protesting school shootings, they fight on. Local teach-ins mark 19th anniversary of Columbine from Champaign. On the anniversary of the 1999 Columbine school shooting, students from local high schools gathered Friday to discuss the same thing that killed 13 people and wounded 20 on that day 19 years ago, gun violence. In Urbana, students gathered at the Independent Media Center for a day of workshops called a teach-in to spark discussion and work on solutions. Some carried signs with slogans like "books, not bullets," or "gun sense, not nonsense." Higher-profile speakers such as Alderman Aaron Ammons urged them to make the day more than a temporary mark in history. "The things you are all doing right now have to be sustained in order for it to be a movement, or else it's a moment." At Champaign Central High School, three seniors organized a teach-in in the library during sixth hour. They said administrators weren't able to approve of having students leave class to go to the IMC event the way Urbana High did, or assign an unexcused absence like was done at University Laboratory High School. Any Champaign District students who left school to attend the day-long event in Urbana faced being given social probation and having to sit out prom. However, there were no repercussions for attending the event in Central's library. Still, the tables set aside for Central's teach-in were filled with students who ate pizza, shared their thoughts on preventing gun violence at school, and listened to a speaker whom organizer Jasmine Chanel said she met at a town hall a few weeks ago, Benjamin Bruppe, a member of the National Rifle Association. "We thought it would be a good perspective to have for us because it's different." Bruppe said he's an active member of the NRA, but also believes the group deliberately scares people into thinking they are going to lose their guns if any gun control measures are enacted. He urged students to fight for new laws and for ostracized voices as they grow up and turn into voters. "If you really want to stop the gun lobby, you have to fight back. There's a war on objective truth. You need to fight for the truth." Once the speech had ended and the students watched videos about gun violence, co-organizers Arnold Brown and Simone Howell handed out papers so those gathered could write to their congressman, Representative Rodney Davis, about their thoughts on gun violence and what they want to see lawmakers do in response to the number of school shootings that have already happened this year. Organizers said they chose Davis because he told them he hadn't received an invitation to their April 6th town hall, despite organizers saying they had video evidence proving otherwise. "We're going to hand-deliver these to his office." Brown said they'd just gotten the word out about their teach-in to Central students Thursday, so it surprised them slightly to see the tables filled. "I thought it was still a big turnout, despite that." And from Urbana, Chief Neitlinger retiring after 25-plus years on the job. At age 57, Urbana Fire Chief Brian Neitlinger is retiring. "I've been able to retire for a couple of years now," he said. "I've looked at retirement and the things I wanted to do for the rest of my life and decided it was a good point to call it quits." Neitlinger's last day will be April 30th, at which point an interim chief will be appointed while the city searches for a replacement. The plan is to hire an interim fire chief for at least the next 120 or 150 days. There will be a broad search for a new fire chief, and the interim will be hired from outside with the expectation that that person will not be competing for the job to give both internal and external candidates a level playing field. With his retirement, Neitlinger caps more than 25 years as a firefighter in Urbana and the University of Illinois. He started in 1993 when he was hired by the U of I Fire Department. When that department closed and the Urbana Fire Department took over its responsibilities in 1998, Neitlinger and eight others moved to the Urbana Department. In 2013, Neitlinger was named Urbana's fire chief, where he says he's been able to accomplish a lot. He cited updating the ambulance ordinance, improving specifications for the department's fire engines, and acquiring better rescue tools. He also cited personnel improvements, saying the department has been recruiting high-quality firefighters and that the administration's relationship with its union is strong. All groups have worked really hard on that. The Urbana Fire Department has 60 employees. Neitlinger was also a volunteer for the Catlin Fire Protection District for 34 years until 2011 when he moved to Urbana. Once he retires, Neitlinger says he plans to travel and enjoy time with his family. Also from Urbana, Hartke resigned seat, moving to Colorado. Petri could quit her board seat to seek his. The head of Champaign County Board's Democratic Party caucus has resigned effective April 30th. Josh Hartke of Champaign will be moving to Colorado, said Board Chairman C. Pius Weibel. Hartke has been the board's strongest voice for maintaining county operation of the county-owned nursing home. I am proud of the work done despite huge obstacles in our way and the constant, unwavering opposition of the Republicans on the board, he wrote in his resignation letter. Maintaining the nursing home as a public resource is a victory. Not spending millions of dollars on a new jail is a victory as well. We created the Racial Justice Task Force and are moving forward with implementing their directives. With hard work from a group of committed local activists, I am leaving the County Board Democratic Caucus stronger, more diverse, more progressive, and more united than it has been. Hartke encouraged the 11 remaining board Democrats to stay loyal to their values, the ones that motivate our base to support us. Remember that the services provided by the nursing home are just as important as those provided by the recorder or the sheriff, that justice comes in enabling and supporting those who need it most, not just in punishing those who make mistakes, and that budgets are statements of priorities. It's unclear how and when the seat Hartke is vacating will be filled. In past cases, precinct committeemen from the affected district, in this case District 6 in Northwest Champaign, would meet to choose a preferred replacement, then forward their recommendation to the county board. Patsy Petry, the board's other District 6 representative, said Friday that she is interested in applying for Hartke's seat. She was defeated in the Democratic primary last month by Mike Ingram, a candidate backed by Hartke. Petri says she believes she could quit her current seat early, her term expires December 1st, and apply to replace Hartke, whose term, she contends, would run until December 2020. It would be a gamble, she said. It's a calculated risk, and I don't know what the rules of the road are. Petri, a board member for more than 7 years and former chair, said it's a very important time to maintain people with institutional history on that board because of the large nascency of members on the county board. Hartke, 43, has served on the board since 2012. He also ran for Congress in 2002 in the old 15th Congressional District, losing to former U.S. Representative Tim Johnson of Urbana. And from the opinions page, a letter to the editor. Tired of reading letters about Rodney Davis. Okay, to the group of organized anti-Rodney Davis voters, we understand you don't like him, won't vote for him, and don't want the rest of us to vote for him. Almost every daily issue of the News Gazette has an anti-Davis letter. We get it, and you don't need to repeat the same theme in each letter. We see your bumper stickers. We get it. You don't like him. We see your bumper stickers when around here. He gets it. You don't like him. The News Gazette has a policy of only a certain number of letters prior to an election, but in this case, the letter writing started late last year and continues. We get it. You don't like him. Have you not realized yet that we now ignore you? Have you changed my vote? Yes, but not in the way you wanted. Richard M. Schroeder, Champaign. Another letter to the editor. Rodney Davis is a hard man to reach. I walked away from Congressman Davis's guest commentary on gun violence very confused. I don't disagree with Davis that there are important conversations surrounding gun violence that we should be having. What confuses me is Davis himself has made these sorts of conversations impossible to have. We can't have these conversations on Davis's Facebook because he's blocked us from commenting. We can't have them during his sporadic tell town halls because his staff only lets softball questions through. We can't have them during his open office hours unless we have a few hours to kill during the workday and can somehow get our concerns across in 10 minutes while the other eight people in the room try and do the same. We can't have them at a town hall because he refuses to hold them. Even if we could, Davis admitted in an interview with the State Journal Register that, despite his insistence that we all need to be part of this conversation, he doesn't want to listen to the people who didn't vote for him. The last thing anyone does in my business is take advice from people who are politically opposed to you, Davis said in March. If Davis truly believed the things he said in his commentary, he would be facilitating these sorts of conversations and leading by example instead of hiding behind talking points. Cameron Rabb, Champaign. Urbana man in custody charged after escape from arrest last week. An Urbana man who fled from police last week, allegedly leaving cocaine in his path, has been arrested and charged with drug and alcohol offenses. Corral Pettis, 33, of the 800 block of East Carr Avenue, was arraigned Friday on charges of possession with intent to deliver cocaine, resisting a peace officer, and aggravated driving under the influence for a series of events that left an Urbana police officer off work with an injury for at least a month. Assistant State's Attorney Will Lynch said that on April 10th, Urbana police were called to the Steak and Shake at 2009 Kenyon Road, where a customer was passed out in a car in the drive-thru. Lynch said the officer found Pettis in a car and noted the smell of cannabis coming from the car and that Pettis was slurring his speech. Police also found a partially consumed bottle of tequila in the car and two small bags of cannabis. After Pettis failed field sobriety tests, the officer started to pat him down before arresting him on charges of driving under the influence. Lynch said Pettis ran, dropping a sock that contained about 18 grams of cocaine, more cannabis, and another substance believed to be heroin or crack cocaine. Lynch said Pettis' cell phone was found in the car. Because of a 2006 conviction for armed violence for which Pettis was sentenced to 17 years in prison, he faces extended term sentencing on all the new charges if convicted. Judge John Kennedy set his bond at $200,000 and told him to be back in court May 22nd. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, April 23rd. Please stay tuned.